It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's our state capitol report. Though they're still technically designees, Governor Tony Evers' cabinet picks have been operating their departments as though they were fully confirmed. We'll find out where the Republican-controlled Senate stands on these appointments and how a Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling will affect those appointments. What do you think of the Senate's decision to not yet confirm any of Governor Evers' cabinet picks? Do you think it's political theater? Or is there something else going on here? Do you think they intend on restoring all 82 former Governor Walker's appointees? Is that the direction you hope to see this go? Is there someone you really hope gets appointed or should have been appointed already? Let us know at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Ricardo Torres is a Milwaukee-based political reporter for Racine County's The Journal-Times. Ricardo, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me.
None of Governor Evers' cabinet picks have been confirmed since he took office in January. Remind us how many people are waiting for confirmation.
It's a little bit north of a dozen people have been waiting for confirmation since they were appointed in January. And so many of them have had their public hearings. I would say most of them have had their public hearings. A lot of them have been through the committee process and are just waiting to be scheduled on the floor for an official vote.
And that the last part seems to be the issue here is actually scheduling these things for a vote. I mean, not even former Democratic Representative Peter Barca has been confirmed, and he's a bipartisan pick. Is it surprising to you that we haven't seen a scheduled vote in the Senate?
I think to some it is a little bit surprising. Like you mentioned with Peter Barca, he was a guy who had unanimous bipartisan support. For example, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who was very critical of many of Governor Evers' picks for secretary positions. When Evers chose Barca for Secretary of Revenue, he said that the governor finally got one right, you know, as an example. State Senator Van Wongart, Republican here in Racine, testified on behalf of Peter Barca to, you know, say that he should be appointed and he should be confirmed. And Peter's nomination has been waiting for scheduling since late February. And there have been a few others that have been through the committee process and have been waiting appointments since late February. There's others that have been and that have had their public hearings. And so I think a lot of people may have thought that having a Democratic governor and a Republican legislature might force the two parties to get to the table and to solve some of the state's issues. And on this, you know, there seems to be a bit of a pause. And but like you said, the designees have been operating their departments as though they have been confirmed.
Ricardo Torres is a Milwaukee-based political reporter for Racine County's The Journal-Times. We'd like listeners to weigh in on this issue of confirming cabinet members for the Evers administration, 800-642-1234. Ricardo, the designees are operating as if they had been confirmed. So at the end of the day, in terms of how the state business is being conducted by the Evers administration, does any of this really matter?
I think it does matter to some extent. I mean, there has to be an official, you know, vote of saying that, you know, someone can run one department over another. I talked to State Senator Bob Wirch, who says some of these designees are operating with a dark cloud over their head. To stick with Peter Barca, for example, not all of these designees say if they were rejected can necessarily go back to their old job. For Peter, there was a special election for his seat. Tip McGuire, a Democrat from Kenosha, won the seat. So Peter, if he hypothetically got rejected, couldn't go back to his normal job in the state legislature. So there is a little bit of that going on. There's a little bit of that uncertainty. And so although they are operating, you know, as though they were confirmed, and I don't think the governor would have chosen people who he'd think wouldn't have gotten confirmed in a Republican state Senate. There still is that feeling of uncertainty that something could change down a party line vote. And so it may seem as though this is just kind of, you know, procedural. I think for some, they would like for this part of the process to be settled.
What has Governor Evers had to say about the lack of action in the Senate on his cabinet picks?
Well, the governor pointed out that the Senate really hasn't been in session much. He spoke to a joint session of the editorial boards of the Kenosha News and Journal Times about a week ago. And he feels confident that his picks will go through, that they're operating in their departments as he wanted them to operate. And so he feels optimistic that this is going to go through. But it is all on the Republican state Senate to schedule these hearings, to schedule these committee votes, to schedule these confirmation votes to get it done.
And part of what's kind of attached to this, it goes back to the last days of the previous administration and the lame duck session. Last month, the Wisconsin State Supreme Court voted 4-3 to restore all 82 of former Governor Scott Walker's appointees. Can you tell us what this means, and who does this affect in particular?
So what that means is even though at any time, the Senate could have confirmed any of Evers' picks for secretary. The Republican state Senate has chosen to wait until the state Supreme Court would settle these appointments that were made during the lame duck session under Governor Walker. And during that time, you know, there's been some political, some legal confusion as to, like, you know, who can be appointed, whether or not the appointments were justified. And the Evers administration obviously thought that they couldn't have been, you know, legally appointed during the lame duck session. The Supreme Court voted otherwise. And so that was kind of the point. It was kind of a political, you know, blow for blow, in a sense. Republican Van Wongard said, you know, that Evers took away the pay for 82 appointed individuals who were confirmed justly through the process. And so that put his cabinet in jeopardy, even though the two don't have anything necessarily to do with each other. It's not like there is some process, there is some legal footing that needed to take place with the 82 appointees under Governor Walker before the Senate could take up Evers' cabinet picks. You know, they could have taken up his cabinet picks at any time. They chose to wait until the Supreme Court came out with their ruling on Governor Walker's appointees. So it was a little bit of some political back and forth. You know, you took away our appointments, you know, we're not going to confirm yours, type of thing. And so now with that case being settled, I think people should expect the confirmations will happen. Yeah, sorry.
Okay, well, we're going to come back to that Supreme Court because there are still some unsettled aspects to that case that I want to touch on. Ricardo Torres is a Milwaukee-based political reporter for Racine County's Journal-Times. Our state capitol report continues in a moment. I'm John Munson. In for Kate Archer Kent, you're listening to the State Capitol Report on the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. In this week's State Capitol Report, we're talking about Governor Evers' cabinet appointment, still waiting for state Senate confirmation, and what a state Supreme Court decision might mean for appointments made during last year's lame duck session. What do you think of the Senate's, so far, failure to schedule a vote on any of Governor Evers' cabinet picks? Do you think this is political theater, or Is there something else going on here? Some practical reason? What do you think? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Ricardo Torres is with us on the State Capitol Report today. He's a Milwaukee-based political reporter for Racine County's Journal-Times. Ricardo, last month, the Wisconsin Supreme Court voted 4-3 to restore all 82 of former Governor Scott Walker's appointees. Tell us, first of all, who this affects in particular.
This affects some of the appointments when it comes to some of the judge positions around the state and some of the lower court officials. And so that's kind of how this primarily affects.
What does it mean then? I mean, are we going to see former Governor Walker's appointees replacing Governor Evers' appointees? What's next?
Well, I believe right now the state Supreme Court said that Governor Walker's appointees were confirmed, you know, rightfully during the process. So I believe right now Governor Walker's appointees will stand. I don't believe Governor Evers had appointed anyone to some of the lower court positions that were being challenged. There were a few. There was about 15 that Governor Evers was planning not to reappoint. And so they still have jobs. But like we were saying before, you know, when it comes to the cabinet picks, you know, this was something that the Senate wanted to get done first. And they waited for the Supreme Court to come up with their ruling before the official cabinet was going to be sworn in.
But the court has yet to rule. In fact, arguments are this week on the underlying constitutional question, which was raised in the original lawsuit. And is that playing into all of this? I mean, is the state Senate going to wait until the court ultimately rules on that question before they act?
They could. I think you would have to ask Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald whether or not he's planning to wait until that ruling comes down. But certainly we've seen before that the state Senate has waited for, you know, other rulings to come down before taking up the issue of Governor Evers' cabinet picks. So it's quite possible that this could go on for longer.
Some of the 15 people this ruling affects include Public Service Commission member Ellen Nowak and University of Wisconsin Regent Scott Bechtol. Are these people that Republicans feel very strongly about to the point where they're unwilling to confirm their replacements?
You know, I haven't spoken directly with some Republicans on those specific appointments. They feel, for the most part, and just speaking in general terms, that Governor Walker has chosen, you know, good people to be in those positions. And so they thought that his appointments should be held up. And when other appointments, you know, open up during the course of Governor Evers' rule as governor, you know, he'll appoint, you know, whomever he thinks should be in some of those lower positions, like you stated. And so I believe that's kind of the atmosphere right now.
Let's take a call. Kevin joins us in Crandon. Kevin, good morning.
Morning, yeah. I think it's pretty – anybody who believes that anything's going to happen in Wisconsin progressively is being incredibly naive, because the Republicans just aren't going to allow it. That's pretty obvious. I mean, it's obvious. Anybody can see that. And it's too bad. But maybe if they get rid of these gerrymandered legislative districts, maybe something will change. But we'll have to see. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right, Kevin, thanks so much for that. Ricardo, Kevin, referring to this is the failure to confirm these cabinet posts as a symptom of a bigger problem. What are you hearing from people as you talk to them about this issue? Do people care about it a lot? Is this important?
In terms of the cabinet pick specifically, I think people don't have strong opinions either way, but people do want Republicans and Democrats to work together. And this is part of the process. We're going to see this played out through the budget process, you know, with a Republican-controlled legislature, but a Democratic governor that has a very strong veto power. So I think people want Republicans and Democrats to get along, you know, and come to basic agreements, you know, about some of these things like confirmation votes and things like that. And I don't think people like how some of these cabinet confirmation votes have been held up for a Supreme Court ruling that didn't technically have anything to do with whether or not confirmation votes should or shouldn't be had. I think that part, I think, frustrates people.
Well, you talked with Democratic State Senator Bob Wirch about all of this. What was his take about the Senate's inaction on the designees?
Well, he said the people put them into office to work together to get things done and that they're not doing the people's business. Senator Wirch thinks, according to his words, that this is just sour grapes over the election, that Republicans are so upset that Governor Evers beat Governor Walker. And so, you know, he believes that they're making it difficult for him on purpose. Because of that, you know, whether or not that's actually the real motivation, I mean, we'll have to wait and see and talk to more Republicans. But that's definitely where Senator Wirch comes from.
Ricardo Torres is with us. He's a Milwaukee-based political reporter for the Racine County Journal-Times. And we're talking on our State Capitol Report about the status of Governor Evers' cabinet. He has the department heads operating as designees, waiting confirmation votes in the Senate. Did Senator Wirch have any idea about when the Senate might move to confirm Governor Evers' cabinet picks?
No, he said that it's really up to the Republicans in the Senate to schedule the vote so they could have the hearings, so they could have the debate on these people, on these picks. And he's said during his time in elected office that he's never seen cabinet picks wait so long to get confirmed, or at least to have a vote on their confirmation. And so he was, you know, frustrated with this process, and he would like them to get confirmed as soon as possible.
Well, are any of these appointments particularly controversial?
There might be some. One that comes to mind is Andrea Palm, who heads up Department of Health Services. She was a former Obama official, so I know there's some Republicans that, you know, might not have thought that was a good pick, but like we stated earlier with Peter Barca, you know, he's someone that has a lot of bipartisan support, and he hasn't gotten a vote yet. So we're kind of just in a wait and see sort of mode when the Republican Senate decides to schedule votes for this.
And what are you hearing from Republicans on this issue? Senator Wirch had his say. Has anyone responded from the Republican side about when they're going to schedule a vote or why they haven't already?
I haven't heard specifically, you know, when or why votes haven't been scheduled, except for the fact that when I was talking to you, I got a statement from Republican Van Wongard, Republican in the Senate representing Racine, and he pointed to the 82 appointments as reason as to why Governor Evers' cabinet picks were held up in a sense. He didn't say held up, you know, I'm kind of putting that in there for him, but he made that connection.
Let's get a quick call in here before we run out of time. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Yes, I disagree with the guest. As someone that leans more Republican, I'm glad the Republicans are actually fighting back against some of the junk that the Democrats have been pulling for such a long time. There's ramifications to the things that the Democrats did or the surrogates to try to hold up Walker's nominations that were duly passed and everything. So I'm glad they're doing it. I wish they'd do more of it.
Okay, Steve in Sun Prairie. Ricardo, any comment on that?
I don't really have much of a comment on that other than I think a lot of people, probably some people do feel that way, and they're happy that the 82 appointment issue was settled before moving on to Governor Evers' cabinet picks.
Well, we'll have to wait and see when the Senate will act and what they will finally do about this. Ricardo, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, John. It was great.
Ricardo Torres is a Milwaukee-based political reporter for Racine County's The Journal-Times. Coming up next on the State Capitol Report, UW System President Ray Cross joins us to talk about what's driving the decline in in-state student enrollment. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. Our State Capitol Report continues as UW System President Ray Cross joins us to talk about a report from state auditors on UW System tuition revenue, among other things. According to the report, UW tuition revenue grew by $366 million over the past 9 years in spite of a significant drop in in-state student enrollment. So what's driving the decline in Wisconsin residents attending UW schools, and who's making up the difference? Are you a UW student, or did you graduate from a UW school? Were you an in-state student or an out-of-state student? Why did you choose the UW? Was it tuition cost? Did they have your major? What was the experience like, and what do you think about frozen tuition for in-state students? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Ray Cross is president of the University of Wisconsin System. Ray, good morning. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, John. It's good to hear my old friend. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty well for a retired guy. State auditors found UW tuition revenue grew $366 million over 9 years as non-resident enrollment surged. What's driving the increase in out-of-state enrollment at the UW?
Well, it's actually the University of Wisconsin is a very good buy for out-of-state students, and for several years, I think there were a number of adjustments that should have been made in our out-of-state tuition to put us on par with others. So that continues to make us very attractive to out-of-state students. And as you noted, that number has grown pretty significantly over the last decade or so.
Yeah, about 10 years ago, it was about 22,000 students, non-residents. Last year, it was 32,000. So that's a pretty big increase.
Yes, it is. And actually, that's very healthy for the state because of the declining demographics and the need for employees. If Wisconsin's economy is going to grow, as it should, we need people. And the University of Wisconsin is an invaluable asset in attracting and retaining people from other states. Unless the population is going to start having more children, I think that's about one of our best solutions.
Well, the audit also found that in-state enrollment dropped by nearly 13,000 students during that same period of time. So we picked up an increase of 10,000 on the non-resident side. We lost 13,000 in-state students, but the out-of-state students are paying a lot more money to come here compared to in-state. And there's the difference in the tuition revenue. Is that the explanation there?
Well, I think it's part of it. We also increased tuition for professional school and graduate students. And so that's a part of it. But out-of-state tuition makes up the most of that, John.
So the decline in in-state enrollment is tied to population. Our high schools are producing fewer graduates. Are there some parts of the state that this affects more than others?
Absolutely. That's one of the challenges. Obviously, the smaller communities, more rural communities, are not only experiencing an out-migration of individuals between the ages of 18 and 65, but those students that are potentially 18-year-old students are also leaving those areas. There's an exodus from the small and rural communities to more urban larger community environment. So you're seeing that exodus exacerbating the problem with demographics in the smaller communities, particularly in, as you know, John, the northern and central parts of the state. That's a big challenge.
Yeah, my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin Superior, is one of those schools that has been negatively impacted by the drop in enrollments. What about Wisconsin's two-year schools? We saw some big changes there in the past year, merging them into moving them out of colleges and extension and moving them to closer ties to regional campuses. What's going on with our two-year schools?
Well, that's where I think the enrollment declines of in those areas has impacted the university the most. As you might suspect, those institutions were established in small, typically rural, not exclusively, but typically rural communities. And when those communities then suffer a significant decline in demographics, why, that impacts these institutions first. So they have been impacted the most over this period. And if you look at the data, it continues. It's starting to stabilize, but nevertheless, you're seeing a significant drop in those numbers. The idea of restructuring, which has gone, knock on wood, John, it's gone very well. There are obviously a few challenges that there always will be. But the goal there is that students continue to pursue any institution they want. There's a guaranteed transfer package agreement. So you go to any one of these two-year institutions and you perform appropriately, you'll be guaranteed admission to any other four-year, including Madison and or Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Ray Cross, president of the UW system, and about what's going on with enrollment, how out-of-state students are helping to make up the difference in tuition revenue, not just out-of-state students, but that's been a big driver for this for the UW and what that might mean going forward. And we're wondering what you think about all of this. And maybe you work within the UW system. You might even work with prospective students. Why do students attend or decide not to attend a UW school? And how do you convince students to stay or to come to Wisconsin? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. You can also tweet us at The Morning Show. You know, I can't even read my own copy. That's I need new glasses. Ray, let's talk about strategies. The UW system is obviously working hard to try to attract more students. What are some of the things that you're considering to bring in more students?
Well, there's a couple of things. We have accelerated our efforts to reach out to what's referred to as non-traditional students, those students 25, potential students 25 or over. There are about 750,000 individuals in Wisconsin that have some college but do not have a degree. And that is an opportunity to help employers find the kind of talent they need and talent this state needs. We have been, secondly, one of the reasons that this is a challenge, is, and the LAB report cites that, we've graduated more numbers, even though we may have fewer students. We're graduating the largest class in the history of the university this year. So that's also complicating it. But that's good. We're putting people through the system faster, and that's a good thing. But it also exacerbates the demographic issue, John.
81% of in-state graduates are living and working in Wisconsin 5 years later. That's a good thing. Are you starting to see evidence that non-resident graduates are staying here as well?
We are. We're seeing that evidence. I think Oshkosh has increased its the graduates that stay here from out of state, that stay in the state and are employed here. They've increased that by over 10% in the last year. Last couple of years, and I think that's a huge improvement. We're also very aggressively trying to secure every student we can an internship with a Wisconsin employer, because we know that if a student interns, they are likely going to be offered a job, assuming they're successful, and in doing that, are more likely to stay in the state. So that's something we're working very hard with on with the business community.
Mm-hmm. What other reasons are there for non-residents opting to stay in Wisconsin? They come for the education, stay for the craft beer, or what is it?
Well, I'm not sure about that. There's so much to like about Wisconsin, and I think a lot of the marketing that we're doing out of state that talks about how easy it is to do things in this state, whether it's recreational and students nowadays, particularly younger graduates, they want to have a life outside of the office. And here you have outdoor life, you have city life, you have all of those things. And, of course, you have the Packers, the Brewers, the Bucks, and mm-hmm. the Badgers, and you have a lot of other things that make it really an exciting and a very vibrant environment.
Let's take a call here. Peter joins us from Winona. Peter, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, my question for Mr. Cross is, has the two-year college system in Wisconsin considered adding athletics or expanding athletics as a way to boost enrollment? I know in Minnesota, Iowa, and Illinois, the two-year colleges with sports and athletic teams seem to have pretty strong enrollment, both in-state and out-of-state.
Peter, thank you for your question. Ray?
I think so. I know in my history, having a strong and vibrant athletic program actually does improve enrollment. It attracts students who often are marginally successful in high school and can play in these kinds of intercollegiate athletics. We're having some difficulty in figuring out exactly how to do that really well. The former program within the two-year campuses it's an exclusive kind of conference, and we're trying to figure out how to propagate that even further or make it much more viable in the future, Peter.
Peter, thank you so much for that call. When you look at graduation rates, how do they differ between UW schools?
Graduation rates obviously get close to 90% at Madison. They drop down because they serve obviously a different level of student, and the more part-time students you have, those graduation rates become less meaningful for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, that's who those institutions serve, and that's an appropriate thing. So it drops all the way down into the 30% range. But if you look at this over a six-year period, they're much more comparable in terms of how they look with their peers.
Ray Cross, president of the UW system, is our guest on this segment of the State Capitol Report. Our conversation with President Cross continues in a moment. You can join us at 800-642-1234. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent. In this edition of the State Capitol Report, we're talking about a recent report from the state's auditors about tuition revenue and enrollment across the University of Wisconsin. UW System President Ray Cross is with us this morning. Are you a UW student, or did you graduate from a UW school? Were you an in-state or out-of-state student? Why did you choose the UW? Tuition, some other reason? They had your major? What was that experience like? And are you staying in Wisconsin to work? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Kevin is with us in Deerfield. Kevin, good morning.
Morning. Thank you. My wife and I both have bachelor's and master's degrees from UW-Madison. Our daughter graduated from UW-Platteville just this past Saturday, and we have a son who will be attending UW-Madison next fall. One thing I've wondered, and I don't know if what the statistics are with respect to UW-Madison, but I would have this concern that there might be some preference given to out-of-state applicants because they come with a higher tuition, especially with respect to UW-Madison. Can you talk to that at all?
Kevin, thanks for the call. Ray Cross?
I think I can, Kevin. Actually, with the declining high school numbers in Wisconsin, Madison has committed to a floor on 3,600 freshman students, and of course, then it accepts transfers. So as a percentage of the high school graduates, we're actually taking more Wisconsin students than we have in the past. If you look at our overall percentage of Wisconsin high school graduates that attend the university, we're roughly the same as we've been for the last 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, pretty consistent around 32%, 34% in that range. So I would argue that we're actually taking a larger percentage of Wisconsin high school graduates, Kevin. In the process, it looks like we're taking more out-of-state students because Madison is growing its overall numbers, but its in-state numbers are actually higher or at least as high as they've always been.
Kevin, thanks for that call. Let's go next to Chris in Mount Horeb. Chris, good morning. You're on the morning show.
Good morning. You know, 6, 7 years ago, the higher ed industry was, or higher ed in general, was abuzz with discussions of massive open online courses and MOOCs, as they were called. Companies like Coursera and edX, Udacity, and others came into that space. I'm wondering what Chancellor or President Cross's opinion is of whether the promise has been of those types of models have been fulfilled, and if the UW is currently incorporating those types of models into its program or its future vision. Thanks.
Chris, thanks so much for that call. Ray, when you were chancellor of Colleges and Extension, that was something you championed. How is that working out?
Actually, Chris is right. As you know, John, a few years ago, MOOCs came onto the scene because they were free and they were incredibly popular. That's really died down, as Chris probably knows, but there has been an expansion and growth in online programs, and as the process gets better and the support systems for those programs get better, that has grown, as well as hybrid. That is, you're in the class as well as online. Those have all grown enormously, and the UW Flex is doing exceedingly well right now, which is a competency-based model, as you referenced, John. It's been very well received, and it's growing. And it's designed to serve those non-traditional students. If you're working and you have three kids, it's hard for you to go back and live in the dorm. It's not going to happen. You have to be able to continue to make money and survive, and that's what those programs are designed to do.
UW-Whitewater has been in the spotlight lately. An investigation found at least 7 to 10 women who say they were sexually harassed by Pete Hill, a husband of former UW-Whitewater Chancellor Beverly Copper. Hill is banned from campus. Beverly will be a tenured psychology professor. How do you think the UW system handled that case?
Actually, I think we handled it very well. As soon as we could validate anything, we conducted 3 separate investigations into that process. And those, as you know, those things are often hard to deal with when there's a he said, she said. But every time we heard something, we dealt with it immediately. And when we had some concrete evidence, we acted. And so I'm very pleased with the way we responded to that.
What have we learned from the UW-Whitewater investigation, and how, if anything, will that change the way the system handles these cases in the future?
I think the system, long before the Michigan State situation, developed some much more aggressive policy. We had a task force working on that for 2 years. How do we do this fairly, honestly, legally, appropriately? The policy which has guided us through all of this also led to what we often refer to with respect to employees, not passing the harasser. We're a part of a national organization. In fact, we're one of the charter members that helped develop policies like that. And we're working with Harvard and Ohio State and Michigan and Stanford to define and better outline our responses and the way we handle this through our policies and practices, John.
Let's take some more calls here in the remaining few minutes of the program. We'll start with Jack in Milwaukee.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to President Cross.
I've taught for many years in the UW system. I teach in the UW colleges, who have now joined with the four-year comprehensives, of course. But faculty salaries have lagged behind so drastically in the UW college structure for decades. And I'm wondering what President Cross is going to do to keep talented faculty. So many have left the two-year campuses, partially due to salary rates.
Jack, thanks for that call. Faculty salary has been an issue for a long time, hasn't it?
It sure has, John, and Jack is right. UW College's faculty are compensated less than their peers in the four-year institutions, even though their credentials are very comparable. And so I appreciate and respect Jack's concern. One of the long-term impacts, I hope, of this restructuring is that those differences will be mediated over time. We are seeking significant increase in compensation for our faculty in this budget and staff, and that's an important part of this. But the difference between what the two-year campuses, the employees at the two-year campuses are being paid and what their counterparts at the four-year institutions is pretty significant, and Jack is he's absolutely right. It's been that way for a long time. Hopefully the restructuring over time will help address that challenge.
Jack, thanks for your call. Let's go to Sarah in Madison next. Sarah, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me on. My question has to do with attendance in the two-year colleges. So as a fellow alum at UW-Waukesha, I was just wondering, why has there never been any discussion about having dormitories on campus? I know that is a huge pull for students right when they graduate from high school, having that separation from their parents, and I think that might be a way to keep enrollment high.
Sarah, thanks for the call. So do we need dorms at the two-year schools?
We actually have residence halls at a majority of the two-year institutions. We do not at Waukesha, as I recall, or a few others. But Sarah is right. That does have an impact. They were originally established to be a local campuses so that students could stay at home and attend these campuses, which made it less expensive for them. So that's how they were originally set up, and that's why we don't have those at every campus. But we have been adding them where appropriate, Sarah, and we do have them at most of the two-year institutions at this point.
Sarah, thank you so much for that call. Boy, lots more to talk about here, but as we are bound by the clock, we're going to have to call a halt. Ray Cross, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to talk to you again.
Likewise, John. Enjoy your partial retirement.
Yeah, I'm for rent in retirement. Ray Cross is the president of the UW system. He joined us from our studios in Madison. Just ahead, a soggy spring has set Wisconsin farmers behind schedule. A specialist evaluates how that will impact crops this season and if there's time for farmers to adjust their planting plans. I'm John Munson, in for Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.